You, come over here. I want to tell you the story of death and of the fairies at the bottom of the universe. My name is Forever. No, you will not get into trouble for listening to me. Student groups are always brought to this wing because I am here and they think I am harmless, like a friendly bear in the zoo, which will permit itself to be petted. The nurses are happy to have me amuse those who come through, for it leaves them free to do their hair or call their boyfriends. They think I'm tame, but they're wrong. Oh, you need not be afraid that I will bite or froth at the mouth or tear my clothing off and caper naked before you. But I am dangerous just the same, because I may cause you to think too much. You can die of that. Oh, yes, you can die of anything, of lonesomeness or homesickness, of a broken heart. You can even die of stupidity. And in the end, if you haven't died of anything else, you die of life. Yes, you're right, I'm old and I talk too much. I'll take your advice and get on with my story. Is it a true story? Forgive me smiling. I know it looks as if I'm laughing at you, but I'm only amused by the irony of your question, for once my mother asked it of me in that same suspicious way. Or not quite. Her exact words were, "Is that true or is it a story?" You see how she used the word story as if it were the word lie. I had told her, you see, that I was late home because the fairies had got hold of me and kept me prisoner. I created that story to make amends for having come home so late. I had not meant to deceive her so much as to offer her my story as a little gift, little knowing how prophetic it was. The truth seemed a drab sparrow of a thing, and so I brought her a gorgeous plumed exotic instead. She slapped me, and in the pain of that slap was an important lesson. No matter how wondrous a story is, if there is no truth in it, it's ugly. But truth is complex and rarely comes in the form of undiluted fact. Stories are facts with soul, and stories that have no truth in them are indeed lies. The nurses here call me a liar, you know. They say, the woman in room 304 tells lies. Just as they say of the woman in room 303, she has Alzheimer's. She is dying of forgetfulness, I tell children, and they nod their little tousled heads with a wisdom that humbles me. Why am I here? I suppose you could say that what ails me is the opposite of what ails the woman in the next room. I am dying of too much knowledge. I am distended with truth, bloated with stories, while the woman in room 303 is almost an empty husk. The knowledge of her life all bled out of her. I have told her many a story to try to nourish her shriveled soul, but they leak out of her as fast as I put them in. The nurses would probably tell you I am dying of lies, which they call senility or old age. Lies do come more easily as death approaches. They form a barricade against the tidal wave of fear that roars at me when I think of dying. Behind that flimsy barricade, life is piercingly sweet. Stories give me the courage I need to keep my promise and to laugh. I will tell you later of the promise. My grandfather was a liar, you know. She probably gets it from your father, my mother used to whisper to my father, as if lies were hereditary. Perhaps she is a throwback, my father would respond, to dissociate himself from our bad blood. My grandfather liked to answer questions with stories. How can she learn if you tell her such outrageous things? My mother would ask him in exasperation. When a drunk driver annihilated my grandfather on a wet road one night, my mother shook her head and said it was a pity, but in her eyes I saw a certain satisfaction, as if he had got his just deserts. One of the stories my grandfather told was this. We were passing the city cemetery. Adjoining it was a field occupied only by a couple of amiable and moth-eaten horses and a grey tower. I asked what the tower was for. My grandfather answered that it held a giant's arm. I have told this story more than once before, but I cannot tell this story without it. It shapes the two great preoccupations of my life, truth and death. In answer to the clamour of questions this tantalising titbit about the giant evoked, my grandfather explained that some eons past, humans had stumbled on a giant's body in a field during a cross-country trek. In those days, this area, my grandfather said in a dry aside, was completely deserted. This accounted for no one knowing the giant existed or noticing the body sooner. Human doctors came to examine the enormous corpse and found that the giant had died stretched out flat, except for one arm. Rigor mortis had set in, and the arm was fixed in that position. The doctors could not shift death from his bones long enough to lower it, and even the engineers and builders had no luck with it. Finally, it was decided to bury the giant normally, except for the offending arm, which would be encased in a stone tower. This would also serve as his monument. I do not know if it still exists. I never leave this place now. As a young woman, I would avoid the cemetery and the field with its mysterious tower. It frightened me, that monument to death. But now, when I'm afraid and my courage fails, I picture it in my mind and whisper, "Long live the giant." Oh, I was afraid of death after my grandfather died. I loved him, and his loss grieved me. But the thought of him mouldering under the ground with the worms in his eyes haunted me. It drove me to seek out truth, for I had got it into my head that truth would save me from death, that somehow truth and immortality were the same thing. Yes, I'm laughing, but I am not so far from sorrow or terror. I laugh to give myself the courage to keep faith with the giant. I laugh because truth is a wild beast with teeth that rend.